Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're charting the third of the five hazards. These are those universal mental weather patterns that can really cloud our clarity. And we're dealing with what might be the stealthiest one of all, the hazard of tuning out.
And this one is, I think, often the most frustrating hazard for people.
Why is that?
Well, precisely because it masquerades as just being tired. But chapter 40 of the RAFT program, it really strips away that disguise. It shows us how this state of dullness, traditionally known as sloth and torpor, is actually a powerful, silent saboteur.
A saboteur of intentional living. I like that. So our mission today is to get under the hood of this inertia, right? To understand why it's such a big deal in our daily lives, or as the program says, off the cushion, and, you know, what practical countermeasures we can actually use to reclaim our presence.
And just to give you some context, we're now sailing deep into the freedom stage of the journey. The whole map for this is the acronym RAFT, and that's just pronounced RAFT.
Right. Recognize, abandon, freedom, train.
Exactly. And this freedom stage is all about developing stable, clear-minded ways of being. But, you know, the path is inevitably littered with these mental obstructions.
And Gautama, the Buddha, pointed out how these things completely distort our view. We've talked about sensual desire coloring the water we look into and ill will making it boil. But how can something like dullness, which feels so passive, be just as dangerous?
That's a fantastic question. It really gets to the heart of the threat. The RAFT program emphasizes that when the mind is obstructed by any of these hazards,
desire, hatred, any of them.
Any of them, yes. The light of our own innate intelligence is just. It's temporarily extinguished. We lose that moment of choice.
So it isn't the feeling of dullness itself that's the hazard. It's the blindness that comes with it. The vulnerability to falling back into old habits.
Precisely. We stop seeing clearly and we start acting on automatic pilot.
Okay, let's unpack that. Chapter 40 gives a really detailed definition of tuning out or athenamitta. How is this different from just being, you know, physically drained after a long day?
It's a very specific dimming of vitality. It's a sinking of both the body and the mind at the same time. You'll recognize it by this kind of fog, a mental dullness, and a pervasive inertia.
So your mind feels heavy.
Heavy, yes. And your interest in things, even things you usually care about, just fades. The heart kind of pulls away from the effort that engagement requires. So it's less about physical depletion and more about an active mental disengagement.
I really love those water metaphors that Gautama used. So if the other hazards are chaotic, what does tuning out look like?
The metaphor for tuning out is a bowl of water that's completely overgrown with algae.
Okay.
So imagine this thick, green, stagnant mass covering the surface. If you try to look into that bowl, you see nothing. It completely obscures the reflective capacity of the mind.
So clarity, wisdom, it's all lost in that murky inertia.
Exactly. There's no movement, no reflection, just this stagnant green blockage.
What strikes me is how deceptive this is. It doesn't feel like a hazard. It feels like relief. It sort of whispers to drift for a moment.
Why do they call it a deceptive promise? Because it promises rest, but what it delivers is consumption. It feels gentle, but it's a really sticky, passive trap. You see, true rest is restorative. It brings you back clearer, more energized.
Right.
Tuning out just digests your awareness. It leaves you with more dullness, deeper disengagement. It's avoidance dressed up as relaxation.
That distinction feels so important for anyone listening because I think we all fall into that trap of just blaming honest fatigue. The program cites the teacher, Christina Feldman, who has this crucial diagnostic test. How can we tell the difference?
This is probably the most practical tool in the chapter. Honest tiredness is wholesome. If you rest, clarity returns pretty quickly. Tuning out, on the other hand, is selective.
Selective avoidance.
Yes. The test is simple. Just observe your energy. If your mind feels way too heavy for meaningful work, like, you know, a difficult email or a deep conversation.
Yeah, a project you've been putting off.
Right. But then that energy instantly returns the moment you pivot to entertainment or scrolling through your phone. That's the signal.
Ah. So it's not a lack of energy. It's an unwillingness to apply that energy to things that require effort.
Precisely. It's the mind choosing the path of least resistance, which is almost always disengagement. And in the RAFT metaphor, this is the doldrums.
Stagnant, windless water.
Exactly. Where the vessel just slows to a drift. And that's when the mind starts quietly whispering, "What's the point?" Or, "Oh, I'll definitely do that later."
And that quiet whisper leads us right to the real danger off the cushion. The guides in the RAFT program are so clear that the biggest problem isn't nodding off in meditation. It's that selective dullness in daily life.
Yes, and that is where the danger really lies. This hazard quietly steers your awareness away from the vital areas of your life that demand your full presence, your full intelligence. We see it play out all the time. It's like a mental black hole of disengagement.
Can you give us some, you know, real world examples of how that works?
Absolutely. Think about a critical decision at work that needs sustained, clear thought. Tuning out makes us just skim the complex proposal and make a snap judgment. Or at home, it might look like emotional withdrawal. Mindless scrolling on your phone exactly when your kid or your partner is trying to tell you something important. You're alert enough for the distraction, but you're too dull to catch the crucial nonverbal cues.
Wow. That failure to apply alertness leads to real mistakes, real friction. That makes the hazard feel so much more tangible. It's not some abstract concept. It's the quiet erosion of quality in our relationships, in our work.
That's why the program treats it as an active threat. It requires us to, you know, drop anchor in mindfulness before we fall overboard into old patterns.
So we can't just wait for motivation to show up and lift the fog.
No, you can't.
What's the navigator's main countermeasure here?
The core solution is something called values-based activation. And it's a beautiful idea. Instead of waiting for the feeling of motivation, you commit to taking small, meaningful actions before the mood shifts.
Oh, that sounds almost stoic. Acting from choice rather than being pushed around by a temporary mood.
It is. You're basically leveraging the body to pull the mind along. If the task feels too big, the activation might just be putting on your running shoes, or opening the document, or just taking one conscious step toward that difficult conversation. You have to break the avoidance loop.
And this is where the support structures come in. The RAFT program reminds us we have the five defenders from earlier chapters. To meet this passive threat of dullness, which of those is most important?
Courageous effort is absolutely paramount. Dullness thrives on this idea that effort is just too heavy or it's pointless. We have to counter that with a gentle but firm willingness to re-engage, even if it starts with just one single breath.
And you need confidence too, I imagine.
Yes, you need confidence. You need that deep knowledge that you are capable of maintaining clarity, which directly counters that toxic whisper of, why bother?
We also hear about the seven supports of awakening. They're often seen as the more refined antidotes, and I know we'll cover them in depth later. But for low-energy states like tuning out, which ones are most critical?
Well, for a sinking mind, we need things that actively lift it up. So we need energy or courage, we need investigation, and really importantly, joy.
Joy.
Yes. These are qualities we cultivate to lift the whole mental tone. Dullness just starves when you feed positive, constructive states into the system. And investigation means intelligently looking at the dullness itself. What exactly am I avoiding right now? Which immediately brings light into the situation.
I love that Gautama didn't just diagnose the problem. He gave this compassionate, graduated ladder of strategies. It reminds me of that analogy in the program about carrying a jar of oil filled right to the brim.
It's the perfect analogy for balanced mindfulness, isn't it? You have to be relaxed enough to walk without tension, but alert enough not to spill a single drop. It's this poised, embodied awareness. And Chapter 40 gives us five steps we can use, escalating the effort only as needed.
So walk us through that first crucial step. What's the very first thing you do?
First, you name it kindly. As soon as you feel that fog descending, you just gently acknowledge it. Drowsy, dull, tuning out is here.
And you say it impersonally.
Yes, non-judgmentally. Yeah. By naming it, you externalize it. It immediately loosens its grip because it becomes something you're observing, not something you're being swallowed by.
The next step, I find this one incredibly effective. It moves from the mental to the physical.
That's right. Brighten the posture. This is an intervention that can instantly shift your mind state. Straighten your spine, open your eyes, maybe stand up and stretch, and crucially, cultivate the perception of light.
What does that mean?
Move toward a window, or even just imagine light filling your internal space. The mind really does follow the body and the environment.
Okay, the third step, gladden the mind, sounds a bit counterintuitive when you're feeling heavy and sluggish. How does recalling something wholesome help fight inertia?
Well, when the mind sinks, it tends to get self-critical, or it dwells on heavy things. Gladdening the mind provides a necessary lift. It means deliberately recalling a moment of integrity or a time you acted with genuine kindness.
Or gratitude.
Or gratitude, yes. Evoking that memory actually shifts the hormonal landscape. It counteracts the lethargy and replaces that heavy, self-focused feeling with lightness and openness.
And if those three gentle steps don't quite cut it, Step 4, ask for a bit more decisive effort.
That's stir-wise energy. You change your object of focus to something more clear and vivid. So if you're focusing on the belly, maybe you shift the cool, crisp feeling of the in-breath at the nostrils. If sitting is the problem, get up and do walking meditation. The key is applying focused energy, not just restless agitation.
And finally, there's this compassionate permission to stop if you really need to, but to do it with discipline.
Yes. If after all that, the energy truly doesn't return, step 5 is vital. Reset. Don't wrestle. Don't fight the dullness. Take a short conscious rest mindfully. The tradition suggests lying on the right side, and then you rise promptly to begin again.
So the intention to start again is the key difference.
That is the difference between this and just surrendering to the dullness. It's the conscious intention to recommence the effort.
So at the deepest philosophical level, what is this entire effort protecting us from?
At its core, the sustained effort protects the mind from the habit of ignorance, or avidya. Tuning out is a profound form of not wanting to know. It's avoiding the full, complex reality of the present moment. By actively choosing engagement, adhering to these principles, we choose to act from our values, not a passive, temporary mood. And that disciplined choice, that is the ultimate freedom.
It's just fascinating how consistently modern science validates these ancient practices. What does neuroscience have to say about this state of tuning out?
Well, neuroscience really corroborates this idea of being at the bottom of the alertness curve. Tuning out correlates with low cortical arousal and parasympathetic dominance. The brain is effectively too relaxed for functional focus. We're below that sweet spot on the inverted U for optimal performance.
And we know that simple things like getting consistent morning bright light have a powerful effect on our internal clock, our cortisol response. It's a physical push to gently nudge the system toward that functional middle ground.
Exactly, just like mindfulness and changing your posture do. And psychologically, tuning out has these deep evolutionary roots. It's analogous to metabolic depression in animals, a way to conserve energy.
Right.
But in modern life, where we need intellectual and emotional effort, it becomes this maladaptive mechanism of passive avoidance.
Which is why modern clinical approaches, like behavioral activation or BA, parallel these ancient antidotes so closely. BA is a common tool for mood disorders, and it explicitly emphasizes taking meaningful action, the activation, before the motivation or the feeling arrives.
Absolutely. If you wait for the motivation to call your friend or to start that project, you might wait forever. Behavioral activation, just like the steps in Chapter 40, teaches you to disrupt that avoidance loop by taking the first small values-aligned step. It's the ancient wisdom, just framed for a modern context.
Before we wrap up this deep dive, we really want to acknowledge the depth of the material we've been exploring. The entire framework, including Chapter 40 on tuning out, comes from the RAFT to Freedom workbook.
And that workbook, it covers 66 chapters, and it was written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen, who are making the entire program freely available online.
You can access all this material and continue your own journey at raft2freedom.org.
And as we conclude, maybe take a moment to reflect on this for yourself. What specific conditions in your life, a time of day, a particular task, a specific environment, what most reliably predicts the onset of tuning out for your mind? Because that recognition is always the first step.
Knowing the weather allows us to navigate it. And to close, a final affirmation on the power of recognition and wise effort from Gautama himself. From Chapter 40.
When sloth and torpor are present, one should arouse energy, examine the danger, and gladden the mind.
A perfect reminder that the choice to reawaken and reengage is always available to you. We look forward to our next deep dive.